Mr. President, members of Congress, you've been making a lot of noise about taking our guns away. But you might want to review history. 1835, Gonzales, Texas Territory. The authorities wanted to confiscate the big gun that protected that colony. You know what the people said? Come and take it. Because they were willing to fight for their freedom and their guns. So are we.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it.
I believe in people's lawful right to bear arms.
What difference at this point does it make?
If you want to protect yourself, get a double barrel shotgun. Fire two blasts outside the house.
One shot. From my cold, dead hands.
We're keeping our guns.
Good evening and welcome to Two Angle Radio. I am Kevin Griffin, and tonight I'm joined with Matt McBrady from the great state of Washington on the West Coast. Good evening, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Anyway, Matt McBrady from the state of Washington, secondthefight.com is your website, an accomplished blogger, a father, and a gun owner, and also our new state director for 2AO. For the state of Washington. So tell us a little bit about your experience as a state director so far.
Well, the experience as a state director is pretty thin since you just got started, but I'm excited to get rolling with that because there's definitely things happening in Washington State with the aftermath of Initiative 594 that got passed here in last November. There's testimony that's happening in the State House. In fact, there was the opportunity to go testify Monday, and then there's also legal actions being pursued just on that issue. Plus there's other things to be done in the state, so definitely excited about moving forward with that.
As far as Initiative 594, or as more commonly known as I-594, and we have not really talked about it on this show at all. For fear of not being familiar with the details. Can you give us the elevator version of 594 and, you know, what happened immediately and what's going to happen and why we need to stop it from moving to Nevada?
Right. So in a nutshell, I-594 was promoted as expanded background checks for gun sales. That's how Every Town for Gun Safety in America, Michael Bloomberg's group, promoted it. They had backing from a lot of billionaires, Bill Gates, Paul Allen, Nick Hanauer, who is an investor in Amazon, Bloomberg, of course. So there's a lot of money. We got outspent by quite a bit. Of course, it wasn't just about background sales. The language of the bill is an 18-page bill. That alone should tell you it has more to do with just background checks. It also had a ban on transfers of firearms. So the language of the bill included sales and transfers. What some of the testimony from law enforcement has running up to the election meant that two people, even if they both had passed federal background checks to get their concealed carry license, couldn't pass their guns back one to another, literally just hand your gun to each other without having to go through a transfer through a federal firearms licensee. So that's created some problems in the aftermath. It did pass. And one of the things that I'm hearing is that Washington State has inquired, or Washington State law enforcement has inquired to the state to find out about impacts that has on training. And they were advised to train out of state, is what I understand.
Yes, let me stop you right there as far as the impact on training. As a firearms instructor, I hand firearms. Well, okay, let's start with individual new to firearms. He's on a range taking a class, and I'm the instructor or the range safety officer. I always instruct the student, if they have a malfunction, to raise the hand that the firearm is not in so I can assist them with the, you know, clear the malfunction, jam the stovepipe, etc. So if I was in Washington State teaching a intro to handgun class and a student had a malfunction and I went to assist them, they hand me the firearm, we've committed a crime, correct?
I believe that they exempted, gun ranges, and I'm not sure exactly how the technical definitions or the legal definitions for it. So, but if you have to be licensed to have a gun range, I think that that's exempted. But if you were doing the same kind of training class someplace that wasn't an official gun range, and you did, somebody handed you your gun, their gun, that would be a gross misdemeanor, and then you hand it back to them, you now committed a felony.
Interesting. Now, I want to, you made a statement previously where they said that they've issued a release telling you to train elsewhere, or was it out of state?
What I understand is that the inquiry back to law enforcement was that they were advised, I believe it was the Washington State State Department was asked, and that they didn't want to comment what the law actually said, which makes me believe that they don't really know. And then they advised the law enforcement agency that made the inquiry that they should train out of state.
Interesting. Train out of state. So, you know, things are doing so well in the state of Washington, they economically speaking, they want to send people out of state to do anything. That just boggles my mind.
Obviously, if you expand this law to all 50 states, that wouldn't work, because then law enforcement would have to go someplace out of the country just to train, and that's not very feasible. So obviously, it's not a principle that you can expand and take to all 50 states.
And law enforcement is not exempt from this law, correct? In their personal lives?
In their personal lives, no.
And this initiative had the backing of some very powerful people, as you were mentioning earlier, mainly the Bloomberg Everytown, whatever they're called these days, Everytown for Gun Safety, I believe, is the nomenclature of the day.
Right.
And they outspent your campaign and your group like 10 to 1.
No, they spent $2 million. The pro-gun side didn't raise $1 million. It was about $600,000. So I think that we were outspent. The pro-gun initiative was outspent by about 18 to 1.
18 to 1. Wow. Wow. Man, there should have been some help. Was the NRA in on this? Gun Owners of America? Second Amendment?
The Second Amendment Foundation was involved. You know, they're headquartered here in Washington, so right in their backyard. And they did get a competing initiative on the ballot that was I-591, that did not pass. Interestingly, Washington State law enforcement overwhelmingly opposed 594, which was the Bloomberg bill, but they overwhelmingly supported 591, which got on the ballot because of the Second Amendment Foundation's efforts. And the NRA was involved.
How badly was that defeated, 591?
Oh, it was. It wasn't really close. I mean, we had terrible voter turnout. We had, I think, about 30% voter turnout, and out of that, about 60% voted for 594, for instance. So they said it was a landslide and a mandate from the people, but 30% of eligible voters, and out of those, 60% of them voted for it. So what is that? It's about 18% of the eligible voters in the state that passed that 594 bill. And I think that the percentages, I have to look at it again, but it was probably something similar, but reversed, for the defeat of 591.
That surprising. I mean, 18%, and this is the second or third time in the past 60 days I've heard everything is decided by 18% of the population. And then, here you are telling me that 18% decided I-594. Is there any chance 594 can be walked back? I mean, is there anything we can do moving forward now that that toothpaste is out of the tube, so to speak?
Sure. Well, so there's a couple of things that are being done. You know, the program lobby is trying to put some more legislation in place that would eliminate or reduce some of the impacts of this. And that's what some of the testimony that happened, this, you know, where the public was allowed to go and testify at the state house this week, what that effort was for. One of the concerns that is there is the budget and the fiscal impact. Part of the bill is to keep a record of everything that's sold. In addition to the requirements that the FFL holders have, to the ATF at the state level, the Department of Licensing, which is what that's replaced the DMV in Washington State. So if you want to get your motor vehicle tabs renewed, you go to the Department of Licensing and they handle some other things. So part of I-594 is to create a registry, really. It's not called that in the bill, but since private sales have been completely eliminated and they want to keep a record of every sale that's happened, that is in effect a database or a registry de facto. And there's big concerns about that because of the privacy issues and the issues, the concerns that later that could be used to confiscate weapons that were legal at the time of purchase that at a later date somebody decides they want to try to make illegal. And then there's also the costs, which is a very, very real impact. At the state level, the spending budget as a bill is the single largest piece of legislation that gets passed. And it's our state budget is billions in Washington. We're hearing rumors that Democrats want to hire a handful of people, like another 7 people or so, just to handle inputting data from sales into this database because they're backlogged as it is. That would be like another $400,000 is what I'm hearing in salary. So those are some of the things that they're trying to prevent or eliminate through new legislation that would minimize what's already been passed. In addition to that, there are lawsuits challenging the constitutionality under Washington State's constitution. And I anticipate that there will be groups that bring lawsuits in terms of the federal constitution, the United States constitution, the infringement upon our Second Amendment protected rights under the U.S. Constitution.
Interesting. And I do understand that there are several myths surrounding I-594 some things that are just kind of blown out of proportion regarding, what was in the bill. You said it was 18 pages long, and I'm sure there's some things in there that are just being looked the other way upon. Quickly, what is one of the myths associated with I-594?
Well, I can tell you in terms of the way that it was promoted, the biggest thing to me that stands out, there's two things. One is that it was promoted as, women's safety, because it doubled the waiting period from 5 days to 10 days in the state. That waiting period is waived if you've got your concealed carry license. But if you don't, you go to the retail store, you make the purchase, you pass the background check, and then you have to go home for now 10 business days, which is 2 weeks. So that was promoted as a women's safety initiative, that doubling the waiting time from one business week, basically five business days to 10 business days, which is 2 calendar weeks. But that would promote safety to women and domestic violence situations and that kind of a thing. I think that's incorrect from the standpoint that if you're a woman and you're in an abusive situation with a boyfriend or husband or what have you, to the point that you feel you need to get a gun for your self-protection, but you don't have your concealed carry license to carry in public yet, you have to wait 2 weeks. So that's 2 weeks that you have to go with no no instrument to defend yourself with. That's a long time, or can be a long time. There was a woman at my wedding.
There does it when help is when you know help is minutes away when seconds count. Now it's help is weeks away when minutes count. Pardon the interruption there. I just wanted to get that on the record.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely right. I was going to share a story. My wife works in mental health, and one of the counselors at her workplace was seeing a male patient who told her that he had fantasies of murdering her in her home, which understandably shook her up pretty well to the point where she felt she needed to go buy a weapon. Now, this was before 594 passed, but if that same situation were to happen today, she would be forced to wait 2 weeks before she could have a gun in her home to defend herself with in that same situation.
Tell me there's a happy ending to this story.
They ended up getting the guy, the help that he needed, and she didn't get killed. But my point is that this bill that was intended, sold as a means to make a woman like her safer, didn't do anything to make her more safe. It just drug out the time period in which she had to wait before she could have something in her home to defend herself with.
Yeah. Wow. And, mental health is something that is a cloud over the firearms industry and us pro-gun people. I mean, it's just something that is just, it's being ignored, swept under the rug. Medication is just being thrown at every problem and we're not getting, it's going nowhere. I mean, look at what happened in Sandy Hook. All those firearms were legally obtained. And, no background checks, no expanded background checks, no registry. Same as Colorado. Nothing would have helped that in either case. I can't believe it.
Right.
And here it comes once again. Brian and I last week delved into the mental health thing, and he had a very, very strong opinion about, we've got to talk about this. We've got to get this out in the open. And here, unbeknownst to me, your wife is in the mental health industry. And I'm sure, she sees it day in and day out. I mean, people that are unbalanced, probably should not have guns. And people that are dealing with people that are not mentally healthy should have access to guns.
Right. Well, and it doesn't take a gun to murder somebody, And it's like, you're talking about some of these, nationally televised mass shootings or killing sprees, like the one that happened this last summer in Santa Barbara. I live at in the UC Santa Barbara sorority girls that were shot. The first three people that were killed with a knife. It was the guy's housemates. So he started out as killing spree, like killing people with a knife, and then he drove around in his car with 41 magazines that were 10 round capacity. 41 fully loaded magazines and killed another three people.
If those were 7-round magazines, that would have made all the difference in the world, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the mentality.
What's the difference between 41 7-round magazines or 41 10-round magazines? No difference.
Right, right. To take a look at some of the other high profile shootings, Virginia Tech, he had 17 magazines. They were mostly 10 rounds. There was a few 15 rounds, but he compensated by bringing more. Same thing with Columbine. They had a Highpoint 9.95, which takes 10 round magazines for 9mm ammunition, handgun ammunition. They brought 13 mags. So, these things that are promoted as a solution, when you take a look at the policy and the likely impact it would have, logically they're no solution. The other thing that was promoted with 594 that was a big myth. I mean, it was not just a myth, actually. It was a complete lie, complete reversal from the truth. The Department of Justice has done studies with incarcerated felons to see where they get their guns, and 80% of them obtain their guns illegally through either the black market or through an illegal straw man purchase, which, for the benefit of the viewers, if you're not familiar, it just means somebody who can pass a background check goes and buys a gun for somebody who could not pass a background check, and then they give it to them. That's illegal. You're committing fraud on the background check forms, and you're illegally transferring possession to somebody who legally is not allowed to have one. Those are both felonies. As is taking possession, you know, if you're a felon and you take possession of a gun, that's another felony. So they're committing multiple crimes, breaking the law in order to obtain a gun in the status quo right now. What Bloomberg's group said was that 80% of criminals obtain their guns through a private transfer. And it is private transfer in the sense that it's not a licensed dealer, but it's like saying that buying coke from a drug dealer is a private transaction because he didn't go to a pharmacy. It's a complete falsehood. There's no comparison between breaking the law in that manner and just having two otherwise law-abiding citizens sell their private property through a private transfer where there's no law being broken.
So, state of Washington, private gun sales are no longer. You cannot do it.
That's correct.
Gun owner. If I wanted to sell a firearm in the state of Washington, I would have to pretty much put it on consignment with an FFL or not sell the firearm.
You'd have to go to an FFL dealer to do the background check. I mean, so if you were here in Washington State and you wanted to sell me a firearm, we could work out the sale, but then we'd have to go, agree on the price in essence, but we'd have to go to an FFL and he'd have to run a background check on me to do that. So yes, there are no more legal private sales, private transactions in Washington State.
And are there gun shows in the state of Washington?
That's a great question. I know that there. I would imagine that they would still continue because one of the myths that's perpetuated about gun shows is, you know, we have this gun show background loophole, and which is not true, of course, because under the current law, if you are an FFL, you must run a background check on every sale, including sales at gun shows, and anybody who's ever been to a gun show and bought one would know that FFL dealers run background checks at gun shows. So I imagine that those are still going to continue because they already have the means at gun shows to run background checks, but it's probably going to limit them from the standpoint that people who could sell their privately owned firearms previously now cannot do that at a gun show.
Once again, the small business owner is probably the victim in erroneously and aggressively passed legislation. And this, when this was up for re-election, I'm sure the TV ads and the road signs and the billboards were saying something like, vote for the children, vote for safety, vote, you know, make the world a safer place. Am I wrong in assuming that?
No, they absolutely pushed that, and they pushed that, you know, the statistics that states with, you know, universal background checks required at the state level have less domestic violence and that kind of a thing. You know, they pushed those stats. You know, the problem with all of this stuff is that correlation does not equal causation. And that's something that people only remember when it's convenient for their argument that they're trying to make. It's all Band-Aid stuff being offered as a solution.
Feel good legislation.
Right, exactly. You know, yeah. Law enforcement was opposed to 594 because they said that we don't think it's going to prevent criminals from getting guns, and that's the main problem.
I think so. Criminals are always, always going to get guns. We got a couple minutes left in this segment. How about you warn your neighbors in Nevada or close by neighbors in Nevada? What's your advice to them to get out in front of this and stop this train from heading to their state?
Yeah, well, they need to rally together and not do any infighting. That definitely occurred with 594 between some of the larger gun organizations out there. So it's not really a matter, you know, after the fact, you know, who said what or who did what. But the point is unity. In the face of well-funded opposition is definitely something that's a takeaway lesson. I think that we could have been benefited from here. So I definitely encourage gun owners in Nevada to be unified in their efforts against it and to fight tooth and nail, because, you know, once the toothpaste is out of the tube, to use your expression, you know, it's harder to get it back in.
Yes, it is. And after Nevada, where do you think their sites will go? Well, how do you, in your expert opinion, what do you think is going to happen in Nevada? Do you think it has a chance?
I don't know enough about Nevada state politics to really offer an opinion that would be anything remotely near expert. It seems like they're kind of more of a red state. I understand that in and around Las Vegas, it's a little bit more blue. But I don't really know. Right, exactly. I was surprised that that was where they're going next. So they must think they've got a good chance there.
Yeah, I was surprised that that was heading toward, I heard that was the next stop was Nevada myself. But the state of Nevada gave us Harry Reid, rumor has it Harry himself would have benefited from having, you know, by having a little personal protection, a.k.a. a close-by method of defending himself not too long ago. Have you seen him lately? And now he's retired.
Yeah, he looks like he got beat up.
Yeah, I think that's the general consensus, is that Harry took a beating in a parking lot and had no method of defending himself. Be careful what you ask for, Harry, because you might get it. When we come back next segment, couple things I want to talk about is Kroger and Moms Demand Action. Kroger's COO, I believe, was just on Squawk Box a couple days ago. And then the Sandy Hook Advisory Council. And then Lucky Gunners had an announcement regarding lawsuits in Colorado. Can you give us a little tease on that? You got about a minute.
Well, the good news there is that the Lucky Gunners won the lawsuit against them that was brought by the Brady campaign. So, yeah, we could talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, that was, I think that news broke earlier yesterday afternoon before we spoke on the phone.
Right, on the last day or so, yeah.
All right, yeah, we got some interesting conversation coming up about that. You're listening to 2AO Radio with Kevin Griffin in Northern Michigan through Washington, D.C., to the great state of Washington with Matt McBrady from Second the Fight. After this short break, we'll be right back. See you in a few seconds. You can stay one more, right, Matt?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay, look forward to talking to you some more. Welcome back to 2AO Radio. I'm Kevin Griffin with Matt McBrady, blogger, father, State of Washington director for 2AO, newly minted state director for 2AO. SecondTheFight.com is his blog. Check it out. He has a great article called 9 Things You Never Knew About the Second Amendment. I butchered that, didn't I, Matt? What's the name of that article?
9 Things You Didn't Know About the Second Amendment.
All right, quickly, if you don't mind, tell us the number 3. Give us a summary of number 3 we didn't know about the Second Amendment, if you might, if you would.
Let's see. Is number 3, are you looking at it? Because I'm not in front of my, I'm not looking at it right now.
I'm not looking at it either. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. Hey, that article is going to be, I believe, in 2AO Nation's next issue. Is that correct?
It should be, yeah. I talked with Katie. Hopefully that will make that in there. But basically, it's things that were taken from the Supreme Court decision, D.C. versus Heller. It was a fascinating read. My opinion is that a lot of people talk about that case without actually having read the opinion from the Supreme Court and what they had to say about it. So I kind of break down some of the big takeaways in that article.
Outstanding. Yes, gives you one more reason to look forward to 2AO Nation's next electronic magazine. Yours truly has an article in there called Logic, Law, and Responsibility. It's a little bit about training and how you need to behave while you're carrying a firearm. Think logically, act responsibly. What you do today could affect people, say, in California while they're trying to get their rights established to carry, or in Massachusetts. If I act foolish in Michigan with my firearm, I might damage other people's cause. That's kind of what my article's about. Okay, enough self-promotion. How's that for today?
Sounds great.
Okay. Kroger and Moms Demand Action. Let's talk a little about, I know how much you love Shannon Watts.
Oh, yeah. What's interesting is that they've had a couple of minor PR successes, a couple, like Jack in the Box asking people to not openly carry inside their stores. And then it was like, a couple of weeks later, one of their stores gets robbed at gunpoint, which kind of illustrates that their PR win is not an actual policy win that's going to make any difference in real people's lives to make people safer. But aside from those few PR wins, they've mostly had losses that they try to spin as wins. For instance, they campaigned to try to have Facebook and Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, to completely ban gun ads and posts from their sites. And all Facebook would do is say that they would make sure that the post didn't indicate a willingness to try to evade the law. So, for instance, you couldn't say that, I'll sell you my gun, with no background check, wink, wink. You can't do that, but I can still post an ad saying that I could sell my gun on Facebook. So far from getting Facebook to completely ban gun ads on their site, they just got a statement from them saying that they make sure that people weren't indicating that they'd evade the law. Of course, that loss, they tried to spin as a win. So, but with Kroger, there's no real spin, with it. It's just a straight up loss. They were demanding that Kroger ban guns from their stores, and Kroger said, no, take a hike, essentially. We abide by the state law in each state where we have stores that we operate, and it's not up to us to legislate. It's up to the local legislators to legislate. So it was a complete rejection of what they had asked to. You made reference to the CEO being on Squawk Box. That's essentially what he said on the air there. And that's the position that they said back from this last August when the petition for Moms Demand first surfaced. They said essentially the same thing.
Yes, it was Kroger's CFO, Michael Schlappman. He was asked about the company's stance on open carry within the chain stores. And up until I read this article and listened in a little bit about this, I was unaware that Kroger was the largest grocery store in the United States. And Kroger has agreed to abide by the local gun laws wherever their stores are located. And it's not up to them to legislate. And, people are going to act responsibly. And I applaud Kroger for doing so, but Kroger shouldn't have had to come out and take a stance one way or the other in this. I mean, they kind of forced their hand.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's absolutely. It's interesting. It's a recurring pattern with activist groups like Mom Demand. Their first target was Starbucks, and that's kind of in my backyard as far as their headquarters go. So definitely was aware of that story. And it was a similar kind of thing. In the original opinion piece they wrote in CNN, they're like, we just want to get coffee. We shouldn't have to have a political debate about it, which is completely phony and disingenuous because anti-gun groups specifically targeted Starbucks for, quote, refusing to change their policy because they've been petitioning them to try to get them to make a stand. So they're trying to make it a political argument. And then they say, oh, we shouldn't have to talk politics, but then they go ahead and they make it political. I think for any business, what they want to do is they want to sell their product. They don't want to get involved into having to make a stand one way or another on any political issue, because I think that most big organizations realize that there are people on both sides of the issue, and that no matter where they take a stand, they're losing with somebody, and they'd rather just avoid it.
I'm looking at a picture here from a Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. It's it looks like a Facebook post. In fact, it is a Facebook post. There's a little girl standing with an ice cream cone and a scruffy-looking guy with a white T-shirt on. He has a AR, modern sporting rifle, slung over his shoulder, and they're standing in the freezer section, and it says, one of them isn't welcome at Kroger. Guess which one? I think they're implying that the little girl with the ice cream cone isn't welcome at Kroger. It's actually pretty funny, but yet it's very, very sad. And then there's another photo with a mean-looking gentleman with a slung modern sporting rifle and a young outstanding youth with a skateboard. And once again, it says one of them isn't welcome at Kroger. Guess which one? I give him credit. I mean, it's effective ad placement, and hey, to think this comes from a couple of moms who got together one day around a soccer field and started dreaming these ideas up, which you and I both know is not true, correct?
Yeah, no, I didn't do the origination on this, but I've referenced it in similar articles about her and done the link back to the original blog article that kind of did the digging on Shannon Watts. And she was named top 40 under 40. PR professional to watch back in 2008 when she worked at WellPoint, you know, big organization, and then she started her own firm. So I mean, she's a highly skilled, trained professional. She knows PR. She knows what she's doing, and she's by no means a stay-at-home mom who's just been baking cookies for PTA meetings for the last 15 years. She's very well funded by Bloomberg, and they have highly paid graphic artists to come up with this stuff, you know, for the visual impact. And, you know, what's interesting is, you know, the photo, I've seen the photos, and they do look slick, but they weren't effective because Kroger told them to take a hike. And in fact, the polling agency that they had paid to run the polls that they used in their ad campaign against Kroger warned that Kroger would stand to lose significantly more business than they would gain by refusing to comply with the petition. You know, in other words, if they didn't give Moms Demand what they want, you're going to lose more business than if you stick to your guns. Well, Kroger stuck to the guns, and their stock's gone up by 21%.
Good for them. That
yeah.
Their stock's gone up that much.
I think that there are other factors. I mean, they didn't get to be the biggest grocery store chain in America by making dumb business decisions. I'm sure that there are other factors that go into their stock going up, but the flip side to it is that the kind of thinly veiled threat that if you don't do what you want, you're going to lose a lot of business didn't end up becoming true.
Well, they pushed around Target relatively successfully, and that's just one that I can think of offhand. Target kind of caved.
Yeah, there've been a few that have. It's interesting, though, because I think in virtually every single one of these instances, it's almost kind of like Moms Demand Action is trying to battle with Open Carry Texas, because people from Open Carry Texas will go and carry one of these national chains, and then they'll be like the next one that Moms Demand targets. So, you know, in the case of like Target and Jack in the Box, what they've said is that they don't want people to open carry. So, but if you've got a concealed carry in that state, you can still conceal carry in there. So what difference does it make? You know, it's you know, again, Band-Aids and not real solutions. The real problem is not some otherwise just completely law-abiding guy who happens to be carrying a gun, whether it's a rifle or a handgun. The problem is criminals. How do you get criminals disarmed? You know, that's the real issue. You know, the FBI gang intelligence report from 2011 says that an average of 48% of violent crime in most jurisdictions is caused by gangs, and it's up to 90% in some. So, you know, those are the kind of people we need to worry about, not people like you and me and whether or not we openly carry or concealed carry. It's kind of a pointless waste of time. But in terms of policy to make people safer, it doesn't do anything.
Once again, the only people that are going to suffer are the law-abiding citizens. And it's interesting that, you know, the open carry, concealed carry issue, most criminals are not going to openly carry a firearm. I mean, that's just in my opinion. If I was a criminal and I had an illegal firearm, The last thing I'm going to do is let people know that I'm, you know, that I'm openly carrying a firearm.
Right.
Open carry. Do you have that in Washington? Are you allowed to open carry in Washington?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Okay. Do you open carry?
I do not, personally. I conceal carry.
Okay. And you choose not to openly carry for a reason or five?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I for people who want to do it, more power to them. It's a choice that I make for myself, from the standpoint that I don't want anybody to know when I'm carrying that I'm carrying, you know. And if there is a situation that arises where I need to draw my firearm, I'd rather have the element of surprise still on my side.
Yeah, the element of surprise. True. I also choose not to openly carry a firearm pretty much all of the time. Now, I will, when I'm training or teaching a class, that's pretty much the only time I exercise my right to open carry. An interesting thing about open carry here in my state of Michigan, most of the open carriers, and I say this with all due respect, are the people that for some reason or another are unable to get their concealed pistol licenses. Hey, that's just how it seems to shake out here. Now, I don't know in your state if you can open carry at will if you do not have a concealed permit.
It's my understanding is there is no restrictions from open carrying, you know, except for areas where you can't take a gun ever, you know, like courts. So then the concealed carry issue is just whether you're licensed to carry concealed. But open carry, my understanding is just there's no qualifiers for that. You can just, if you've got a gun, you want to open carry it, you're legal to do so. There's the people that are pro open carry, I think have got justifiable rationale for it. You know, they believe that the more people open carry, the more people will be used to it and less people will freak out. I think that's probably true. And the rationale is also that if concealed carry is a deterrent to crime, and that's what the CDC has said, then open carry is likely to be even more of a deterrent. You know, like how likely are bad guys to try to start something where there's a whole bunch of people openly carrying, you know? And I think that the answer is not very likely. So I think that they've got some good points. It's just something that I personally have just never done, except for, like you said, if I'm out of range or if I'm out in the woods, I don't mind open carrying.
Yeah. I'm pretty much the same way. And like I said, when I'm teaching, I will openly carry a firearm sometimes for demonstration purposes while instructing.
Right.
Changing topics here a little bit, and something that came out recently, since we've had March 6th, that's recently, is the Sandy Hook Advisory Commission. Are you familiar with some of the ridiculous recommendations that they passed?
Yeah, I've read some kind of summary articles, and I actually looked at the 277-page findings, to read for myself from it. I haven't read the whole thing, but I did read the some stuff out of the introduction in the beginning. So familiar with it, yes.
Once again, mandatory background checks. It's something that just keeps coming up again and again, which leads to registry, which could potentially lead to confiscation. There's a couple of these that jump out. Recommendation number 6, Matt, is allow ammunition purchases only for registered firearms. Now, we have that in a couple places already, and crime it hasn't done anything to slow down the crime rate. Washington, D.C. comes to mind, and the city of Chicago.
Right. Yeah, like I was saying, all of these recommendations are purely political, window dressing. Like you said, feel good policy. There's no logical reason to believe that they would actually produce a positive effect and increase safety for anybody. So take a look at the event that happened in Sandy Hook. The guns were purchased legally. Requiring a mandatory background check would not stop the shooter from killing his mother and stealing those guns. It'd have no effect. Same thing with limiting purchases only to people that had firearms licenses. Same thing. He didn't need that to obtain the ammunition that he used to in the shooting. So they have no impact on the Sandy Hook shooting incident. And so here you have the Sandy Hook Advisory Committee saying, oh, we think this is a recommendation as per policy that we should adopt. But it would clearly have no impact on the outcome of that event.
No, nothing would have changed. It would have, everything would have stayed the same. Here's an interesting one. Recommendation number 15, requiring promoters of gun shows to receive a permit from the chief of police or chief elected official, as well as provide notice to the commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Emergency Services. So for a gun show, a promoter of a gun show, you have to get a letter. Wow. That one's really, really surprising. That is way out there.
It just sounds like adding more burden to the people that want to put that on. And again, for no real effect. The DOJ studies of where criminals get their guns indicate that less than 1% get them at gun shows. So, and they, you know, so, I mean, would you use birth control if it had a less than 1% effective rating? I mean, you know, would you do anything if it had a 99% chance of not working? You know, and then say, well, you got to try something as a justification for almost certain failure.
Yeah, it's, again, it's back to feel-good legislation, doing something, anything to keep these people getting reelected to office and throwing more pages of legislation at us, which ultimately affects the law-abiding citizens because the criminals aren't going to abide by any of this. In fact,
right.
Criminals probably actually learn from this type of stuff and become better, and they know, you know, what not to do or how not to fall in this. Yeah, it's just dumb stuff. Background checks lead to registry, which is going to lead to confiscation. I want to bring up something we had mentioned earlier about the lawsuits in Colorado, and you know, they were thrown out. Is that correct?
Well, they lost the lawsuit in
the lawsuit.
The document that I saw was just like a screenshot of part of the legal paper. They were, you know, being required to pay for legal costs because they lost. So that's my understanding of it. I haven't done in-depth reading of it. But in a nutshell, the Brady campaign got together with some of the families from the Aurora, Colorado shooting, some of the families of the victims, to bring a lawsuit against LuckyGunner.com and I believe another online retailer that sold ammunition to the shooter in the Aurora, Colorado movie theater shooting event. And so, you know, it's completely legal to sell the ammunition. But they wanted to sue LuckyGunner.com for selling them the ammunition. And then they've lost that lawsuit.
Yeah. It's like trying to sue General Motors for the car accident that, you know, somebody ran into you and now you're injured. It's like trying to sue the car manufacturer or the nail gun manufacturer, or, you know, any manufacturer. It's not the manufacturer's fault. They,
right.
You know, it would have stopped nothing. And the lawsuit was brought about by the Brady campaign, who is well-funded by people that are very familiar, that are becoming household names. And, you know, it's good that the lawsuit was lost.
Absolutely.
Very, very good. Yes. Go ahead, man.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I was just going to say that one of the things that, point that I'd like to bring up here, you know, we're talking about all of these, this wasted effort, you know, through frivolous lawsuits, through legislation that's, you know, feel good, but not ultimately going to achieve a positive net result in making us safer. And what I'd love to see, and I write about this in my articles, and nobody talks about, is the addressing the underlying causes. You know, if the FBI is saying that basically half of violent crime in America, 48% on average, is almost exactly half. If 48% of violent crime in America is being caused by gangs, then why aren't we talking about a solution for that? You know, or the mental health issue that you brought up earlier, or some of the other things that we know are underlying factors that lead to violence. Why don't we address the root causes of the problem rather than engage in policy that's not going to change anything, or frivolous lawsuits.
If they wanted to truly stop crime, they could. They know where the bad neighborhoods are. They know where the illegal guns are. They know where the drugs are made. They know where the drugs are sold. They know where, you know, they could essentially stop it or slow it down. I mean, they're not on a hamster wheel. They know exactly what needs to be done, but they want to make law-abiding citizens pay the price, and we're the only ones that are hurt. Changing up again, Brian Crosswhite, who's producing our show tonight, had just interviewed a couple of police officers from Ithaca, New York, I believe it is. And he has a recording, a short interview with them he would like to share in the last couple minutes of the show. Sorry to cut you short, Matt, and I hope you stay and listen and hear this. Should be pretty good. Brian, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
All right. Can you give us a little insight into what you have for us to close out the show?
We're here at a cafe. We're just talking to some people and ran to two police officers. We're talking about what was going on, listening to the show, and they wanted to give their perspective on, like, open carry, since this is a big issue and we hear it a lot. So this is, I think, something that I think people should be listening to and taking perspective when we talk about open carry versus concealed carry. So I'll go ahead and cue up the clip here.
So this is Brian with 2AO Radio, here interviewing a captain from a police department in the great state of New York, which we also call the communist state of New York, since they have the worst gun laws in the union. Well, I take that back, New Jersey. But anyway, we're talking about open carry and concealed carry. And I think the perspective that they have should be warranted. I think we need to listen to what they have to say, because we see a lot of people, and you see a lot of people in Texas walking around carrying AR-15s and the open carry. We have open carry here in Virginia. And I think we really need to understand as a public what's really going on from this perspective. You're seeing people carrying AR-15s into stores. And yeah, it's a little bit freaky, especially if you don't know the law. But what is the police perspective that you guys have on open carry? Like, if you get a call from someone saying, hey, someone's carrying a gun, what is the normal reaction of a police officer?
Well, it's a matter of urgency from the initial complaint. So when we get the call that's occurred, you know, our curiosity is heightened, and we're on alert. So we're gonna respond, and we're gonna try to find out, you know, what's occurring.
Exactly. So whenever you get a call, the problem is that we see junior police officers, and I know you've been in the force for a long time. I mean, you're an old man.
Yeah.
And I'm just joking. But you have junior police officers who may not have the experience that you guys have been in the force for a long time. You see them react in a different way whenever you get these calls, right?
Yeah, and you know, there is a difference between myself, who's been on, 20 years, who knows that there's reasons for somebody to be carrying a weapon, and one of those reasons might be a legitimate reason. Whereas with newer officers, younger officers, they may feel that's a threat right from the initial complaint, from the person who called in that situation. And that's not always the case.
Right. And so in your state, if you got a call, if you're caught carrying a weapon and it's not registered with your state, what is the offense there?
It would be some sort of like a criminal possession of a weapon. So we would have to confirm whether the person has a permit to carry that weapon. And if not, they can be charged with possession of the weapon.
Right. So this is in the state of New York, but we have like certain laws here in Virginia. If you're open carrying or you conceal carry, you don't necessarily have to be registered. You don't have to register your gun. So right. We have different laws. It varies from different states. What's the advice for people who are traveling through New York and they're traveling with a gun in their car?
Well, I would say it's you have to perhaps do a little research on the laws of the states of that you're going to be traveling in. So if you're in a situation where you are carrying a weapon, whether it's out in public or you're traveling in your vehicle, you need to make sure that you know what the laws are for that particular state that you're going to be traveling in, and what kind of restrictions are going to be placed upon you as somebody who has permission to carry that weapon.
So Kevin, this was a great interview, I think, and I think it was pretty enlightening to hear from the police force what they go through in their state. And these guys told me that they get calls all the time of people carrying guns and they have to react. And
MWG.
We need to know what the laws are when it comes down to concealed carry and open carry in each state. We at 2A are doing our part to be able to change this legislation where these states are going to follow the Constitution. I know, Matt, you talked about it quite a bit. We really need to keep pushing, especially in states of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, those states who are really liberal on the Second Amendment policies. We need to change these laws, and we need to unite the people in those states to get behind our organization, and let's make a difference.
That was really, really good that you were able to put all that together while Matt and I were talking earlier. Thumbs up to you, Brian. Appreciate the initiative and your ambition in doing so. That was very enlightening. It was good to hear right from the source of the mouth.
Not a problem.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Matt, your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's some stuff going on nationally with reciprocity laws that are, bills that are proposed for that. And I think in terms of just uniting, whether you just like to hunt or you just like to have a gun for protection or whatever the case may be, I think the more that we see all of, each other on the same team and can join together to protect our rights, that the more that we can, the more positive we can achieve. Because the truth is...
We're running out of time. Sorry to cut you off like that.
No worries.
All right. 2AO Radio with Kevin Griffin and Matt McBrady. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.